Good day, and welcome to the Norit Nickel call on heat and power plant accident in Norit. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Vladimir Zhukov. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. Our apologies for delaying the start of the call. We had some technical problems with getting all the speakers on the line, and apparently, we'll just the audience been the lines were overwhelmed. Anyhow, let me introduce the speakers for today. Sergey Dyachenko, First Vice President, Chief Operating Officer. Sergey Malyshev, Senior Vice President, Chief Financial Officer. And Gary Penny, Chairman of the Board. Now it's my pleasure to pass the microphone over to Sergey Dyachenko. Sergey Nikolaevich, over to you.
Yes. Good day to everyone. I believe that, you know, that all of you had a chance to look at the presentation, and I will take you through the slides that we managed to prepare. The first slide, it's slide number 3. In fact, it's actually another Chelsea about the accident which took place on the 29th of May this year, when due to the failure of, you know, the stand of the diesel storage tank, we had, you know, the emergency when, you know, the diesel tank actually got damaged or disintegrated, and, you know, the diesel fuel got discharged into the, you know, the catchment facility, and, you know, the overspilled and got onto, you know, the pit, and over the pit, you know, they found way to the, you know, river, creek, and then to the river. And as we actually, you know, they announced in the press, we actually think that, you know, at this stage, we think that, you know, it could be caused by the thawing of permafrost, and, you know, this really, you know, the result in the sinking of support posts for that, you know, the storage tank. We have to say that because, you know, the power plant where this accident took place, located quite remotely from Norilsk, the city wasn't impacted. And, you know, all our major water points that actually supply water to city and suburbs were not affected either. We actually know by now that over a short period of time, 21,163 tons of diesel fuel leaked, and, you know, as I mentioned already, it actually got into the designated pit, and then, you know, they got into, you know, the Zemanu stream. At this stage, we just, you know, when we actually announced this, we actually, you know, they split it, you know, the roughly, you know, the 5,000 tons and, you know, the 16,000 tons, saying that, you know, it could have been 5,000 tons actually got into the ground, and 16,000 tons got into the, you know, the river system, right? And that was really, you know, was actually taken as an estimate based on the area of, you know, the river, and, you know, we actually saw it, you know, from the helicopter. We done, you know, the quick, you know, the sums, and we thought that, you know, the area is, you know, the approximately, you know, the 16,000, right? You know, we actually took, you know, the approximate, you know, thickness of the layer, and that's how we actually got to that number. But, you know, now as we actually do, you know, the ground removal, we'll be actually, you know, issuing more and more, you know, the precise information, because we managed to actually, you know, to capture more and more of this, you know, the diesel fuel from the area, you know, surrounding this, you know, the storage tank, and from the, you know, the pit nearby, you know, to this storage. Slide number 4 is really talks about, you know, the company where the accident took place. At the energy company, it's our, you know, wholly, you know, the own subsidiary. And this, you know, the power plant actually serves our, you know, the major smelter, Nadezhda smelter, and also, you know, some of the suburbs and other, you know, the small industrial facilities for our company. This power plant was long time ago. It was converted to natural gas, and it's actually quite, you know, the clean, you know, the power plant. And the diesel fuel is prescribed to be used only in emergency, in event of, you know, some, you know, the gas, you know, the supply failure, right? And according to those, you know, the calcs, the state, you know, prescribed calcs, we're supposed to have, you know, a certain amount of diesel fuel in the tanks, you know, the just in case of this, you know, the event. The storage tank in question, number five, was built in 1985. According to the design, you know, the document, right, which actually, you know, gone through the state expertise, and, you know, the, during this life of this, you know, the storage tank, it was, you know, the going through the, you know, the numerous safety audits also prescribed by the government. And that's the official, you know, the body certified by the government. They've got their own procedure, and they go through all this, you know, the details of the storage tank, and then they pass, you know, the report where they actually reflect, you know, the state of this, you know, the facility, and also they can pass some, you know, the notes for, you know, the for further correction. Okay. So I'm going to mention, you know, the this, you know, safety audits of 2016, when, you know, the some, you know, the deviations were observed, and, you know, the company stopped using this storage tank, and the repair work took place in 2017 and 2018. And this, you know, the this storage tank then actually, you know, they went through prescribed, you know, the hydraulic test and the supervision of, you know, the specified of certified body, right? Then, you know, the full industrial safety audit was performed, and there were just, you know, the five, you know, the deviations, which were not actually, you know, the actually, you know, the quite, you know, detrimental, right? You know, the those deviations were actually corrected, and the specific documents, you know, the internal documents, we actually, you know, the issued saying that, you know, that this deviation was dealt with, and those, you know, details of the work, you know, the there was, you know, the photo evidence evidence of this, you know, the work done, and then by, you know, the specifically prescribed, you know, the internal document, this, you know, this storage tank was actually, you know, put into, you know, the operation. Right, you know, the document signed by the chief engineer of, you know, this power station, right, and also under observation of this, you know, the certified body, because, you know, that they had to actually do, you know, the ultrasonic testing while the fuel actually being filled into this, you know, the tank, and, you know, they were observing, you know, the some, you know, the deformations, and, you know, the whether they were within limits or not, right. So after that, you know, the specific report was passed from that, you know, certified authority saying that, you know, the tank actually, you know, the is fine, actually no deviations observed. Slide number five now talks about, you know, the our response to this, you know, the accident. So the first, you know, the information was in 12:55. When the, actually, you know, the information goes to the dispatch center about, you know, the fire, first, you know, the fire incident, right? And the immediate response was, you know, the to actually, you know, the to deal with, you know, the fire. And the fire brigade from the, you know, the rescue team actually reported to the site, and the fire was actually, you know, the suppressed. Right. In the same time, there was examination, and according to the examinations, you know, the area was actually, you know, the covered with, you know, the diesel, and you know, the service team and the management team actually got into this, you know, the facility, and they actually found that, you know, the this, you know, the diesel fuel tank actually, you know, the got, you know, the opening at the bottom, and it's actually, you know, the empty. So then, according to the documents, you know, we knew that the tank was had approximately 21, not approximately, exactly, according to the documents, 21,163 tons of, you know, the diesel fuel, and now it's empty. The reports actually went to the rescue authorities, you know, in Norilsk city, and then at the, you know, the emergency station. And the emergency station at Norilsk actually passed it, you know, to the, you know, the area emergency station. And in fact, you know, the reports were going, you know, the four times during 29th of, you know, the May, as, you know, that we got, you know, the more and more information about, you know, this event. And, you know, we have to actually, you know, tell that there is actually, you know, the rescue plan, which was approved by, you know, the authorities, you know, the rescue authorities. And, you know, the team from that, you know, the power station was dealing with this, you know, the accident in line with emergency plan, right? They notified, and then immediately they, you know, they created, you know, formed, you know, the response team. And that, you know, the response team actually got, you know, immediately to, you know, the observations. And, you know, they pulled some equipment to start, you know, the dealing with the contaminated area. You know, the first observation of, you know, the creek actually shown, you know, that, you know, the small signs of the, you know, the diesel. And, you know, at that stage, you know, the team thought that, you know, the whole area, and that was still, you know, the daytime on the 29th. The team was actually thinking that, you know, all, you know, the diesel fuel actually got within this, you know, the pit, specified pit, right? That's why they stopped dealing with, you know, the ground contamination. And they got, you know, the order to go and examine, you know, the area below the creek, you know, to the river, right, which they did with the rescue team. And they found, you know, the first, you know, the signs of, you know, the contamination. And then was, you know, the helicopter, you know, the flight. And that's when they actually, you know, they managed to actually see, you know, the contaminated area within the river. And, you know, then we found, you know, the specialists from Murmansk. And those, you know, the teams were actually specifically dealing with this kind of event. And they formed the team. And that team was actually brought, you know, to the site. And, you know, I have to mention that, you know, our own rescue team, when they first, you know, found the contamination, they managed to put, you know, the first two lines of barriers to stop, you know, the diesel fuel going into, you know, further into the water system of Fatina Lake and further, right? So, in fact, you know, by doing this, we managed to, you know, confine this, you know, the plate and stop, you know, further, you know, moving of this, you know, the diesel fuel into the lake. Then when the rescue specified, you know, the sea rescue team arrived, Marine Rescue Service, they actually, you know, they put already, you know, the several lines of, you know, the tons of this, you know, the diesel fuel. Then we had, you know, the involvement from, you know, the ground bodies, Ministry of Emergency Situation, and, you know, we actually had, you know, some other teams from, you know, companies arriving to the site, right? And, you know, at this stage, you've got, you know, close to 500 people on site. In fact, you know, slightly more. You've got, you know, 250 units of equipment involved in the cleanup. We've got more than 20 capturing zones with, you know, bones separated with the bones. And you've got all necessary equipment and, you know, sorbent to actually deal with this, sorbent forms to deal with this, you know, contamination. Slide number six, actually, you know, also talking about, you know, some, you know, the arrangements, you know, that's taking place on site, right? We've managed to bring, you know, the flexible tanks with a total capacity of 16,000 tons. And this, you know, the tanks been actually, you know, the established, you know, along the river bank, right? And, you know, the oil teams currently pumping, you know, the oil, you know, the water, diesel, you know, the mixture into those, you know, flexible tanks, right? And we believe that, you know, we'll be able to get all the, you know, the contamination into the tanks, and if needs be, we'll bring, you know, the more of those tanks. But our, you know, the goal is really, you know, that you get all this contamination, you know, the fully cleaned, right? With regards to the soil, that, you know, the peat I mentioned, in fact, you know, the soaked with diesel fuel, right? And, you know, we dug some, you know, the trenches, and we also brought, you know, the flexible containers. And currently, you know, the pump and, you know, the everything what we can actually collect into those, you know, the flexible tanks, right? All contaminated ground from that area, as soon as actually, you know, getting, you know, the sort of, you know, the dry and fully pumped out, we actually, you know, the moving to, you know, specific, you know, the places, hangars, with, you know, the concrete walls and, you know, the concrete floor and the walls. And later we'll actually take, you know, the decision on the most appropriate way of cleaning that ground and reducing, you know, the hazard, you know, the status of this ground, and then place in the specific, you know, the areas. Slide number 7 is, you know, the updated information on what we managed to do to this today, right? It talks about, you know, the amount of, you know, the contaminated soil that we managed to clean already. It's more than 23,000 tons today, and we actually pumping, you know, the water fuel mixture at, you know, at the power plant, and at this stage we managed to pump more than 1,500, you know, the cubic meters of this, you know, the mixture, and that's predominantly diesel fuel, right? Very little of water, just, you know, the fuel. 5,200 cubic meters of, you know, the water fuel mixture, it's actually collected, you know, by joint team from the Ambarna River. And in fact, you know, the intensity of this work has increased, and the wind at this stage helping a bit, right? It's moving all this, you know, the spoils to the, you know, the catchment facilities, to the bombs, and that helps our rescue teams, you know, to effectively pump it. So I have to mention, over the past 20 hours, they've managed to pump 2,500 cubic meters of this, you know, mixture, right? And we also use, you know, the sorbents, and at this stage, you know, the 53,000 square meters of, you know, the area, and that, you know, the area along the, you know, the banks, river banks, actually been treated with sorbent, and then, you know, sorbent been removed. To deal with this incident of, you know, the accident, we think that, you know, they will have to deal with, you know, the fuel storage, you know, the facilities at the power plant, and we'll have to actually clean, you know, the area around, and we'll have to actually clean, you know, the whole, you know, contaminated water, and our, you know, the roughest, you know, the in origin of 10 billion rubles that might be actually, you know, spent on all this, you know, the events. And again, I will mention that, you know, the source, you know, the takes into account our, you know, the storage facility to get it intact, ready for work. If you talk about, you know, the fines that's going to be imposed by the government body, right, you know, there are several estimates, you know, you know, you might actually talk about this, you know, later, but, you know, the assessment will be done as we go further into investigation and the cleaning process, and the indication was that, you know, they will get this assessment by 26th of June. We're also working with the local, you know, the stakeholders, right, you know, the people who actually live in the area, right, and they actually had, you know, some, you know, the concerns about, you know, the fish, and they had concerns with, you know, the deer, Right, and that's why, you know, we agreed on some, you know, the programs, you know, the conservation programs. We actually, you know, they're going to bring and, you know, they release juvenile fish, and that's a pristine, you know, the fish into the water. And, you know, that you probably, you know, that you increase, you know, the population, because at this stage, no sign of, you know, the of that fish, you know, the and, you know, that we don't have it yet, right, and we hope that we won't. But in any case, we're actually going to actually release, you know, the more fish into the lake. Also, you know, we're going to actually look at, you know, the increasing, you know, the reindeer population in the area. And you've got, you know, the some local, you know, the people very interested in this, you know, the project. And you're going to assist them with, you know, the re-establishing additional, you know, the, you know, the number of, you know, the reindeers. In fact, what I have to mention on this slide, number 8, the company is still, you know, very dedicated to the environment, and we very regret to what really happened, and, you know, all necessary steps will be undertaken to also, you know, review our technical procedures and to, you know, to establish, you know, the program of, you know, the permafrost observation for the entire area. We're looking at, you know, the real-time, you know, the control deformation tools that will be given, you know, any signals, you know, from the residential area, and especially from our, you know, the industrial area of any movement, because, you know, many of our, you know, the infrastructure, you know, the buildings, actually, you know, on those, you know, the poles, right, and they submerged into, you know, the permafrost, and now, when we see that, you know, some, you know, the deterioration of permafrost can cause this kind of, you know, the accidents, we're going to do it, you know, as soon as possible. Company is going with, you know, the huge, you know, the environmental project on the pollution, and we still, you know, they confirm that we're going to do with this, you know, the sulfur dioxide capturing huge project for our, you know, the major smelters. Working on, you know, the water cleaning facilities for all our, you know, the industrial units. And, you know, the company actually, you know, they already, you know, they announced, you know, the size of those, you know, the environmental projects, right? And that's Norilsk. You know, it's probably not the right place, but, you know, we also do, you know, do lots of things at, you know, Kola Peninsula with regards to the environment. And I hope all this, you know, they're going to help us, you know, that you know, they improve our environmental footprint for our, you know, the operations in Norilsk, in the larger Norilsk area, and also in the areas of our presence. Next slide, slide number 9, and slide number 10, etc. You can see, you know, the pictures, and you can see some, you know, the notes that actually you will see in the public release from the various sources, and talking about that the company has not promptly reported accident to the government, and, you know, we put, you know, the exact, you know, the timing for the 29th of May, when we did it according to our prescribed procedure with regards to, you know, this rescue plan approved by the authorities, when, you know, the each, you know, the state was actually reported to, you know, the tree emergency center, which was sending this information further to the Krasnoyarsk region rescue dispatch room. Also, you know, talking about, you know, oil spills spread in Shepatina Lake, and it's going, you know, further to the Kara Sea. And I will have to tell you that, you know, the distance from, you know, the Pasina Lake to Kara Sea, you know, it's more than 500 kilometers. Right, and you got, you know, the area photography from the space photos that actually showing that, you know, the area, you know, the quite confined, and that, you know, the diesel oil spill actually confined within the Sambarna River, right? And we taken, you know, the samples within, you know, the Sambarna River have improved, you know, dramatically, right? And you've got, you know, the small traces, you know, the entrance to Pasina Lake, you know, at the catchment facility, right? and the cleaning process is still, you know, taking place quite intensively. And, you know, the, our samples in Patina Lake and at the discharge from the Patina Lake showing, you know, the zero, you know, the contamination result, right? Obviously, you know, the, you will get, you know, the more, you know, the formal information from the government bodies, right? But we're actually working with them in a close, you know, the cooperation, right? You know, the, we do everything possible, and the government body takes, you know, the legal samples, right? And they actually, you know, they publish them, you know, the, in right, in the appropriate, you know, the source. Right, you know, the, someone actually, you know, they mentioned that, you know, 90% of, you know, leaked fuel couldn't be collected, right? And in fact, you know, the, according to the experts working on site, and I mentioned this, you know, the Marine Rescue Team, and, you know, the all, you know, the teams that actually, you know, they came from the oil and gas companies, right? And we actually, you know, they're quite thankful to those, you know, the companies who actually send their teams and helping us in a difficult situation. They're quite confident that we'll be able to actually remove all contamination from the water, right? And, you know, the, obviously we'll be dealing with the ground because it's actually our industrial, you know, piece of ground assigned to the company, right? We'll be actually dealing with this, you know, the accordingly, and we'll be, we'll manage to actually clean, you know, the most of this stuff. Then we show all this, you know, this space, you know, the pictures taken, you know, the from the by the independent, you know, the body. We show you a picture of, you know, the removal of contaminated soil. We see all, you see all the trenches and the flexible, you know, storage capacities, and you see all the equipment that's actually digging and, you know, they're moving the ground. We've got, you know, the lots of people there involved. And again, we'll be doing everything possible to actually know that you deal with this, you know, the very sad for us accident. Thank you. I'm open for the questions, but I would like to actually, you know, pass the floor first to our chairman, Mr. Gareth Penny, and then we'll be answering your questions.
Thank you, Sergey. Can I check with you, Vladimir, whether Sergey Malachev is going to say something first or whether you want me to comment immediately?
No, yes, please comment immediately.
Okay. So, firstly, may I thank all of you on the call. I do want to tell you that there are many members of the main board of NARIL and independent directors that are on this call as well. And that is to underline our importance, the importance that we attach to this issue and indeed to the wider environmental challenges that the company has faced. And I want to make several points, if I may. The first is that we are focused on this immediate accident and on what needs to be done in order to rectify it. And I think Sergey has taken us through a number of the challenges, the progress that is being made, the people, the equipment, and the technology that is being deployed. And I can tell you that the board is being updated on a daily basis. There are many of us who, of course, given the circumstances with Corona, cannot get up there right now. But we are updated daily and given progress reports as things progress towards the cleanup that Sergey has described. The second point that I want to make is that over and above the immediate work of cleanup that needs to be done is, of course, working with the various groups that live in the area and the environment. And again, Sergey has outlined a number of contributing steps that we are currently making to improving the environment in that area. The third point I want to make is that clearly we need to do a full audit of the buildings and the infrastructure. Again, this has been referenced, but to assess the risks and what work needs to be done in the very, very immediate short term to address issues like permafrost and the like. I think colleagues, the frustration for us is that this incident comes against the backdrop of significant progress that Nornickel is making in the environmental space. You will be aware that we have outlined a $2.5 billion plan to address the issue.
Garrett, we lost you.
Yes, Mr. Penny has dropped.
Well, let's wait for Gary to redial back, and let's wait until he finishes what he was planning to say. Thank you.
Colleague, sorry.
He is now reconnected.
Thank you. Can you all hear me again?
Yes, we can hear
Vladimir,
you.
Vladimir, you can hear me. Thank you. So the point that I was making is that this accident comes against the backdrop of a very significant commitment that the company has made to address the sulfur emissions in particular. We have a plan to capture 45%, nearly half the sulfur emissions in the next 2 years, and then beyond that, over 90%. I'm pleased to tell you as well that we are making significant progress in devising a plan and an action in terms of addressing climate change and how we can contribute to that. And we've also been looking very carefully at what additional capacity we need in the company to address these wider issues. I don't want to go into those particular points today, other than to give reassurance to our analysts and to our shareholders and investors that we are very, very focused on the question of the environment and climate change and determined to address the immediate challenges that this accident has posed. Again, I'm happy to take questions around the stance of the board and general corporate governance issues, but I would ask you to address all your practical issues to Sergei Dechenko, who is the man on the ground and best equipped to answer them. I'll hand back now to the moderator, if I may.
Thank you. Q&A is only open to analysts and investors today. If you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, press star 1 to ask a question. We'll pause just for a moment to allow everyone an opportunity to signal for questions. Again, a star 1. Again, a star 1 to ask a question. We now have a question from Dan Shaw, Morgan Stanley.
Hi. Thanks for the presentation. Just two questions from me. First one, given that this incident has happened essentially sort of at the beginning of what are the warmer summer months rather than at the end, is that something that is more concerning to you here? And then following on from that, when do you anticipate that the full audit that you're talking about, when can that essentially be completed? When do you think you'll have a better idea of the possible risks to your business? And then secondly, if we think on a slightly longer term horizon, if further thawing becomes a consistent theme, how should we think about risks, for example, with flooding, given the underground nature of your mining operation? Thank you.
Thank you very much. It's a very, very important question. First of all, we do, the first examination to all our, the diesel fuel storage capacities, all our tanks, right? And we're going to actually, do specific, the actions, with regards to the drilling and the ground probing, the checking, the what section or the kind of deterioration we've got at, the other site, right? The second one, we actually do, the exact mapping of all our, the facilities that currently actually, the built on the poles, and it's also, the pulling, the old information on the way it's actually, it was designed, right? Then, they do, the reassurance, the checks, the specific, the drilling to also examine, the what kind of, the grounds you've got under those, the facilities. As I mentioned already, right, we go and check, the place, the specific, the instrument that go and check, the show us, deformation in real time, and so that we will be able to actually, the react or respond, the in real time almost immediately, what actually happens on the ground and do, specific observations, right? So once this, the map done and you do, the full assessment and understand, the what kind of, the ground conditions you've got, right? We will be able to actually, that you, the probably communicate, our action plan. So if we need any, the actions to, the reinforce, the ground under those, facilities, right? Yes, and underground operations, we'll have to examine, the all the, the shaft facilities, the infrastructure, right, just to make sure that, that infrastructure will be intact. That's all I can say at this stage. There are numerous methods how to actually, that you deal with permafrost, and you'll have to find, the most efficient for our conditions.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Nina Jerganova.
Sergei Nikolaevich, Garrett, thank you very much for the presentation. My first question relates to the cleanup cost. You estimate preliminary cost at approximately 10 billion rubles. Could you speak in more detail how this estimate is made, what big categories of expenses include, and at least approximately what is the breakdown of this amount by these broad categories, if you can make it?
You're right, preliminary cleanup cost is estimated at approximately 10 billion rubles, it's circa $150 million. Unfortunately, the exact assessment of the cleanup cost will be prepared on the full assessment of the environmental impact and remediation plan are prepared. Cleanup cost has a lot of parts, a lot of fuel and tank, and some liability company, the self-sort parties, and et cetera. And of course, cost cleanup cost is the main part of this month.
Understood. Thank you. A short follow-up. What part of this expense are we likely to see still in second quarter, or most of it will fall into third quarter? And will there be anything in fourth quarter, or we think that majority will fall into July, August?
Could you repeat again?
In terms of timing of this expense, Shall we expect, what breakdown shall we expect between June and the second half of the year? And in second half of the year, shall we be expecting it mostly to occur in the summer, or there will be some remainings in the end of the year?
It depends on the current plan that we that now are prepared.
In our plan, we're going to actually, you know, pay for all, you know, the assistance we're getting from, you know, the rescue brigades, for all the tools, all the materials. And, you know, the task is, you know, that you get, you know, the water clean, you know, the within, you know, the next, you know, the maximum, you know, the 10 days, right? But that will be, you know, the major cleanup to the water, right? And then we'll be forming our team and we'll be using turbines. And before, you know, the snowfall, we'll have to clean all the banks of the river and all the banks of the creek. So it mostly will be, you know, the material and tools for this, you know, the cleaning activities. That's the first of all. Secondly, we spent money and we're still going to spend money for the flexible, you know, the diesel tanks, right? And that's the diesel water mixture. So what are you going to do? We're going to actually, you know, bring this, you know, the flexible tanks to, you know, specific equipment that's going to assist us, you know, that you separate water from, you know, the diesel fuel. And that's also, you know, to some extent, that's a transportation cost. It's also, you know, the cost of, you know, the treating this, you know, this, you know, the mixture, right? You know, separating water and diesel fuel, right? Then, you know, we're going to, before, you know, the August, we're going to remove all this contaminated ground from, you know, from the pit and, you know, close to the power station, right? And this, you know, the transportation cost and excavation cost, and obviously when we find this, you know, the solution, the best solution how to deal with this, you know, contaminated ground, also it will be, you know, some chemicals and, you know, some additional, you know, the reagents to deal with the ground. It's a cost, right? So all these costs will be up until, you know, the 1st of September will be spent. We have to actually deal and close this issue with contamination, you know, before, you know, the cold, you know, the season, right? In the same time, we actually prepared, you know, the plan to actually, you know, fully actually, you know, remove this, you know, damaged, you know, the storage tank. And in the same time, you know, that you do, you know, the full assessment of, you know, the elements of this, you know, the tank and basement and the pole, and do, you know, the drilling and then invite, you know, the special, you know, the companies, you know, that's going to actually, you know, assist us in examining this, you know, the specific, you know, part to create, you know, the correct, you know, the understanding of, you know, the mechanisms of what actually, you know, happened, you know, and, you know, the level of, you know, the kind of deterioration of this, you know, the ground, okay? And then we'll have to restore, you know, the facility, and also, you know, that's the actually part of our plan. We'll have to restore, you know, the tanks, fuel storage capacities. To allow, you know, the power plant to work without any issues. Mr. Malashev mentioned that, you know, we've lost, you know, and we'll have to replenish, you know, 21,000 tons of this diesel fuel. And obviously with the current, you know, price, it's more than 1 billion rubles, okay? But, you know, I think, you know, the majority of this money will go into, you know, dealing with, you know, the contamination and then, you know, restoration of the facilities. And, you know, the money that we're going to spend on the numerous, you know, consultancies, that's going to assist us, you know, in understanding of, you know, issues with, you know, this permafrost. I mentioned already that, you know, we're going to do, you know, full mapping of, you know, the large Norilsk area, right? And you're going to do, you know, the specific, you know, drilling in, you know, very important places to understand the permafrost behavior. Right, you're going to install, you know, the specific tools, and that's money, and create, you know, response center to actually to control all, you know, the permafrost area, you know, within our, you know, the industrial facilities. So that's our, you know, the rough estimate. It might be more, right? But I think, you know, these figures will be in, you know, the published and, you know, the disclosed, you know, the at, you know, the at the specific, you know, points.
Let me add, if I can, this is Vladimir Zhukov. Basically, as of the reporting date of our first half financial results, and I remind you that we report our financial results semi-annually, which will be coming out probably first or second week of August, basically the first half of August, we'll be showing provisions made, which will be based on the best our estimates of net cash outflow to basically cover cleanup costs, pay financial penalties, and the rest. So essentially, you'll see how much exactly we're planning to reserve based on better understanding when we publish our first half results.
Correct.
That is clear. Thank you very much for detailed answer, Tim. Just a very short follow-up from me. Just from financial audit standpoint, what part of these 10 billion rubles can be classified as operating expense and what can fall into CapEx? And for OPEX, are we correct to assume that it will appear above EBITDA line?
You know, it depends on structure, breakdown of this cost. And we are going to estimate it further.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That is it from me.
Our next question comes from Daniel Major, UBS.
Hi there. Thanks so much. A couple of follow-up questions. You mentioned around the audit of all the buildings and facilities located on the permafrost. Can you give us a sense of what proportion of the industrial area is located on the permafrost and what is on sort of bedrock in very broad terms to give us a sense of the scale and the potential liability from these incidents in the future? That's my first question.
Yeah. Look, you know, the Norilsk area, you know, it's really no permafrost area. And, you know, the majority of our, you know, the facilities actually on the poles, right? And, you know, the, to split, you know, the correct, it's just, you know, the, difficult to quote me. At this stage, I can say, you know, the 60-40, right? But when you actually get, you know, the exact map and if you chance, you know, that you communicate, I will show you exactly, you know, what's the percentage split.
Okay, but the point is, from a high level perspective, most of the area isn't on the permafrost. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, great. And then the second question, just a clarification, within the 10 billion rubles, does that include the spending, additional spending you'll be doing on monitoring the rest of the industrial area, or is that just the cleanup? I think you already mentioned it, but I just want to clarify.
Yeah, it will be, you know, the same activities that we're going to actually take, you know, to actually understand, you know, the stability of our infrastructure as well.
Okay, very clear. Thanks so much.
Our next question comes from Nikolai Sosnovsky, Prosperity Capital Management.
Yes, hello. Thanks a lot for the presentation. I've got a couple of technical questions and one financial. I go one by one, if you don't mind. The first one is on the damaged tank itself. As far as I can see on slide number 12, there is no kind of safety wall rampart around the tank. So what was the reason this fuel storage was built without any kind of natural surface protective measures like the safety wall around or any surface catchment area, and it is located at some sort of hill so that the spill could flow over all the way around to nearby rivers, which is not, I mean, the adjacent area. So that's my first question.
That's a question or it's a statement? Look, that's how people actually make, you know, wrong statements in the press, right? You know, the obviously, you know, there is actually catchment area around this, you know, the tank, right? And that's a design in line with, you know, the approved by the government, you know, design, okay? And there is specific, you know, the cows been actually put in place, you know, the for specific, you know, discharge, right? And, you know, the emergency plan actually, you know, the shows that, you know, the in the event of this, you know, the kind of, you know, the size, right, you know, the 75% will be actually, you know, the entrapped into this, you know, the within the walls, right, which in fact are built and they're still there, right? Although with the last event, you know, that, you know, the wall and the floor of this, you know, the entrapment actually, you know, they got, you know, significant crack. That actually tells me that, you know, the event was quite severe, so that, you know, they all submerged, right? And according to that rescue plan, you know, 25% was supposed to be overspilled, right, into this, you know, the you know, the catchment area, you know, the below where we dig in the trenches currently. That's the peak, right? But, you know, the, yes, and, you know, the dynamics of this discharge were actually, you know, they're much more severe and much faster than in the calcs. And that's why, and the also, you know, opening was such, you know, the small and directly, you know, directed, you know, to the specific area. So, you know, the from that, you know, the opening, you know, the diesel oil actually was going over this wall into the, you know, the pit, right, you know, the first. And just, you know, the then, you know, it found its way into, you know, the small, small creek, right? So that's actually how it happened. But the walls are there.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thanks. And the second question is also about your safety equipment. Do you have any kind of movement monitoring equipment at this particular site? And also, I'm curious if you have any such equipment at your open pit, which is monitoring the wall stability and any particular water inflows and movements in particular parts of the open pit. So this is first part of the question. And second question, if you do have such an equipment and you make these observations, was it the kind of local phenomena, this tank failure, or the entire region, including open pits and potentially underground operations, is susceptible to very quick changes and geotechnical instability at the moment?
Yeah. The, first of all, you know, the open pit, it's quite far, right? And it's actually not in the Pima Prost area. It's actually, you know, the in the rocky conditions, right? And if you talk about this, you know, the Pima Prost area, no, we don't have at this stage, you know, the real time, you know, the monitoring tools to monitor, you know, the permafrost. And that's what I was telling, that, you know, we're going to, you know, the cow with the map, and then, you know, the cow with specific tools to monitor deformations.
And underground deformations and particular increases in water in the
underground. Yeah, all our workings on the ground, actually, you know, the far, actually deeper than, you know, the permafrost area, right? And, you know, the, and yet we still have, you know, the seismic system. That's, you know, the measuring, you know, the any seismic event that's actually taking place, you know, the at the depth, right? And that's absolutely different story, right? With regards to, you know, the surface facilities which actually placed on a permafrost, I am repeating again that we are going to establish, you know, permafrost monitoring system.
And just to extend on one of the previous questions regarding the temperatures, I've been looking at the historical numbers these and past years, and indeed first half of 2020 has been so far much warmer than the previous observations. But generally, May temperatures were still well below what you have in Norilsk in June, July, commonly. So what do you think is the particular reason for this kind of May failure and not kind of July, when potentially the peak of warm temperatures will happen?
Look, you know, I'm fairly new to Norilsk, and I've been observing this, you know, since 2013, when we had, you know, the first, you know, the very hot summer, And, you know, in fact, we had a problem with, you know, the fresh water supply because, you know, there's not enough snow, right? And the temperatures are going as high as 30 degrees, you know, centigrade, you know, in Norilsk, right? And if you look at the graphs, you know, the actually winter temperatures, you know, the much warmer than the previous, you know, decades, right? And, you know, the summer temperatures, you know, they're slightly higher, right? You know, the good, actually, you know, the example is that we actually got, you know, the Yenisei River going, you know, the much earlier than in the previous years. So, you know, if, you know, the previous years we're actually planning, you know, the ice going through the river and, you know, at the end of May, right? You know, this year we've got, you know, the ice actually, you know, the gone through the river by, you know, the 25th of May already, okay? So it actually tells you that, you know, there's something dramatic happened with the, you know, the temperatures, right? And obviously it actually got its impact on, you know, on the ground.
Okay, many thanks. And my final question on finance, I know it's too early probably to comment, but how do you think, is there any reason to expect any significant changes in the capital allocation policy of Norilsk Nickel going forward in terms of increased capex and probably some changes to the dividend policy?
About capex, we don't expect the accidentally impact our environmental program per se. At the same time, depending on the audit results, we may increase or bring forward investments in our energy infrastructure. This includes fuel tanks, gas pipelines, power lines, etc. Even if such investments indeed increased, the impact on the overall capex spend is likely to be limited, perhaps up to 5-10% range in the next few years. Regarding the dividends, I hope we will not change our policy. And
okay, thanks a lot. All clear.
Our next question comes from Elizabeth Gunning, PGIM.
Hi, thank you all for having this call. And I'm sorry if you answered this already. I had some audio issues, but I just wanted to be clear about what was being done in the way of monitoring before this accident. Who was doing the monitoring of the permafrost area? Was it the company? Was there any government regulation that might have also been doing some monitoring? And I know you're coming out with the audit, and we'll have more details then, but just preliminarily, what do you think will change, and how might there be some changes with the government oversight?
Yeah, I think, you know, with all this, you know, the events that actually, you know, they've taken place, not just, you know, the Norilsk area, but other areas affected with permafrost, right, there will be actually significant decisions made at the, you know, the federal level, the government level. And so I think, you know, that there will be, you know, the quite, you know, strong request to reestablish, you know, the permafrost monitoring from, you know, from the local level and also, you know, from the regional and the federal level. You know, in the early stages, we had just, you know, in the area of Norilsk, there was a laboratory and still laboratory of, you know, the permafrost, you know, the monitoring. But, you know, because they were just, you know, the time-to-time events in the residential area, they were more, you know, involved in the residential issues, right? You know, but it didn't have, you know, the I would say, you know, the widespread, you know, the effect. Now with this, you know, the all of a sudden, you know, the issue, so obviously, you know, we're going to, from the company perspective, we're going to actually, you know, create, you know, our own, you know, team, which is going to actually look after, you know, this, you know, the monitoring devices. And I think at the regional level, there will be some, you know, the additional, you know, the forces, you know, the resources actually put in place to monitor.
Okay, thank you. I guess my follow-up question though is, was there any real monitoring being done?
There wasn't actually the precise monitoring done on permafrost before.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Najida Delovich, JP Morgan.
Hello, thank you very much for the conference and information. Just a quick question to follow up on the costs related to the cleanup and new programs related to permafrost monitoring. What you expect to be the sources of the funds for all this project, whether you would use your own cash or going to borrow on the market?
This is Vladimir Zhukov. We're going to use our cash.
Without borrowing.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Anna Antonova, JP Morgan.
Yeah, thank you for the presentation. Small follow-up question from our side. So the preliminary cost estimate of 10 billion rubles, just to clarify, does it potentially include one of the options for water fuel spill remediation plant, i.e. A pipeline construction, if you choose this option? So whether these potential costs are within this guidance or not. Thank you.
Yeah, there are several options, how to deal with this water fuel, mixture. And we still have to decide, when we collect, the substance, we'll see how much we're going to get, on site. And then we'll decide whether it's actually better to transport, without, separating first. Or, it's better to, put, temporary, the pipeline. And then just, pump it, to the nearest, the railway, and then, the transport to the separation point. We're still working on it. Yes, but, the money actually, there wasn't this, the pool.
This is Vladimir Zhukov again. I would like to reiterate that this $10 billion, or about $150 million estimate is a highly preliminary number, and the final number will be calculated and communicated to you guys once we complete the full assessment of the damage and sort of recultivation needed and all the rest. So, but this is highly preliminary estimate, as is.
Our next question comes from Noel Mellon, GMO.
Good evening, thank you. I just have two questions, please. One is, have you guys ever had a spill similar to this happen in the past? And the second is, I believe you said that you'll be able to get all of the diesel fuel out of the water. Could you please say how much you expect to be able to get out of the soil?
Okay. Vladimir, can you
I think we have probably lost one of our speakers who might have been able to answer a question. Let's wait see if he dials back in.
Sure.
Hello?
You are live, sir.
Yeah, sorry. Sorry, you know, there was some disruption on the line. To answer your question, we didn't have, you know, these fields, you know, the before, right? You know, there could have been, you know, the some small events, but, you know, all of them were within, you know, the entrapment, right? And, you know, not this size, you know. And the second half of your question, sorry, was?
The second half was, I believe you said that you expect to be able to get all of the diesel out of the water. Could you please say how much you expect to be able to get out of the soil?
Again, you know, during my presentation, I saw that, you know, they will get, you know, the exact, you know, the counts when we manage to remove, you know, the oil contaminated ground. And we still, you know, the pumping this, you know, the soaking, you know, the diesel fuel out of that, you know, the ground. It's difficult for me to guess, but I think, you know, it's quite substantial amount will be removed from, you know, from the industrial zone, from the ground. And, you know, then, you know, this, you know, contaminated, you know, the rock itself, you know, it's got, you know, the probably, you know, 7 to 10% saturation. So when we remove all the ground, you know, and we apply this, you know, you'll see that, you know, the earth, you know, quite substantial number will be coming, you know, with this, you know, the ground. I think, you know, the balance might actually, you know, shift towards, you know, the soil, you know, from the water. But, you know, in any case, you know, when we remove all the, you know, the contaminated water, you know, we'll see how much is this. And when you start, you know, separating diesel from water, we also will be able to, you know, estimate how much of this, you know, the diesel we got from the water. And, you know, also, I believe it shouldn't be actually forgotten that, you know, diesel oil is quite light, right? And actually, you know, the evaporates also quite intensively, right? So we'll have to check, you know, the coefficient for evaporation.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mark Hazy, Oak Tree Capital.
Hi, guys. The first question is more on sort of the governance side. You know, the company is very diligent in reporting the incident across our local and federal government channels. Why did it take Norilsk 2 days to report the accident to investors?
Well, let me take this question. This is Vladimir Zhukov. Hi, Mark. Well, basically, as Sergei Nikolaevich explained earlier during his presentation, on May 29th, when the accident took place, we identified spill into and the leakage from the tank into the local into the sort of a local containment pit as well as into the ground. But we learned that the spill went into the nearby stream only on May 30th. And on May 30th, we sent a special rescue team to and using all-terrain vehicles, because it's not really, you know, drivable road, basically using all-terrain vehicles to investigate further and examine areas further down the stream. When they reached the river, they identified that the spill reached the river and installed the first containment bombs. And after that, when we realized that the spill reached the river, we launched aerial inspections of the area, which were conducted on May 31st. And that's when we realized how much of the spill actually got into the water. That was actually Sunday. May 30th was Saturday. So Sunday, May 31st, that's when we decided to issue a press release and notify the public of that accident. But as you appreciate, and as I said earlier, all the notifications to regional and local authorities, according to due procedures, were made on May 29th. On May 29th, we also provided comments to various press inquiries, and the regional office based in the rules of the Ministry of Emergency Situations published a press release of that accident on their website on May 29th. It actually 1 p.m. Noon.
Okay. If I could ask sort of questions on the environmental side, is there real, this is the power plant number 3, so I assume there's 1 and 2 where you have diesel storage. Is the company considering performing any sort of preventative measures for the other diesel tanks, just in addition to monitoring the permafrost?
Yeah, of course. Of course. We do diesel fuel storages at power plant number 1 and power plant number 2. And, you know, the examination has been done already. You know, it's dedicated teams. And they've done, you know, the visual examination. They checked, you know, all the documents. And as I mentioned, you know, before, now we're going to do, you know, the confirmation drilling, right? You know, they just, you know, that you see, you know, the condition of the ground there. Because, you know, at that stage, you know, I didn't get any, you know, the verbal report or written report saying that, you know, we see also, you know, some, you know, deterioration, cracks, etc. But, you know, in any case, we're going to drill and we're going to examine, you know, ground there.
Physically removing just diesel from the river system. As far as I've read, diesel can be pretty strong pollutant, not only just, you know, being physically present, but can also damage sort of water systems beyond where the diesel is sitting. So what is NEROS going to do to mitigate longer-term environmental damage from the pollutants entering this river system?
What Narusk is going to do to prevent, you know, the future damage to, you know, to the water system? Is that what you're asking?
I'm asking, is there anything else Narusk has already sort of put in place or planned to mitigate damage beyond, you know, physically cleaning up the diesel to restore the environment to the condition that it was prior to the accident?
Yeah, obviously, you know, samples been taken, right, and we're going to monitor, you know, the water conditions, right? Obviously, first of all, we'll have to clean everything, right? And, you know, they will have to clean, you know, river banks, we'll have to clean, you know, water, right, and we will continue taking samples. And as I mentioned, you know, we're also going to actually, you know, work with, you know, the biodiversity. We're going to actually, you know, check, you know, the river, fish conditions. And you're going to actually, you know, take, you know, samples with, you know, the authorities and see what actually, you know, the riverbed looks like and with, you know, the microorganisms. Right, and you know, they also, you know, they put additional, you know, the fish, you know, into the lake. So everything what we can do, we will do.
And the 10 billion ruble estimate for environmental damage, that just assumes the physical cleanup, correct? It doesn't include maybe results from, you know, the sampling that you will be doing and some of the possibly longer term cleanup that will be required. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay, our final question comes from Irina Lapshina.
Thank you very much for the call. A couple of questions from our side. Do you have any sort of insurance for such cases? And if yes, what should be proved to be a reason for the accident to get the compensation?
So the amount of the full storage facility and the full itself are covered by property insurance. We expect that only direct property damage will be covered by our current insurance. So the proceeds from insurance will cover only a part of overall losses. The required insurance claims have been made in accordance with policy terms. The insurance would not cover cleanup costs as well as any liability the company may face as a result of the accident.
So could you provide any number for the compensation which you may get from the insurance company?
$30 million.
Sorry, for how much?
$30 million.
$30 million. Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much. Yeah, understood. And the second question is about the penalties. So as we understand, the assessment should be done by June 26th. But mm-hmm. you're going to collect as much fuel as possible, as we understand. So will it sort of change the amount of penalties you're going to pay, or what is the approach in this case, I mean, from our state authorities, of course? So basically the results all the work you're going to do by that date, will it lower the amount of penalties or is something independent from that?
There is actually the specific the formula that the authorities will be using, and that takes into account the time that actually it takes to remedy this environmental impact. And it's the size of the environmental impact. It's obviously, the amount of ground that's been actually contaminated and removed. And it's also, the with regards to the water, it's time and the residual effect. Right. So, the obviously authorities, they've got this, the methodologies, and they're going to apply them.
Okay, and given that there are a number of oil and gas companies operating in this region, and probably they had some similar problems, but of course of a smaller scale, could you give us any example if something happened, let's say over the last 5 years, and what were the penalties in that case, and how much did it cost them to collect the fuel?
No, I don't have the exact the fact for the other places how much they pay in fines.
Okay, understood. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
At this time, I would like to turn the call over to Vladimir Zhukov.
Thank you everyone for dialing in, and apologies again for delaying the start of the call. We had some technical issues. COVID is not only impacting the people, but it's also impacting the lines and equipment, I suppose. I would also like to remind you that the latest presentation that Sergey Nikolaevich has been going through is available on our website. And we're planning going forward, as long as updates come with further progress on the cleanup, we'll be updating this presentation, so please check it from time to time on our website. I would also like to flag up to you that the current progress in terms of more sort of qualitative stuff is also available on our website. We have opened a special sort of a section where we provide updates as they come. And if you have any further questions which you haven't had an opportunity to ask or still outstanding, feel free to reach out to either our IR teams or if you're journalists or PR teams. And thank you everyone again for dialing in. We hope that was productive for you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. This concludes today's teleconference. You may now disconnect.